Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reeder. Consumers of products, services, and information seem to be under more threats than ever before, and many of the sources of protection from government, the media, and independent organizations have been weakened. My guest this week on the Campbell Conversations is on the front lines of the struggle to protect and empower consumers. Marta Tolado is the president and CEO of Consumer Reports. Next Wednesday, March 24th at 4 p.m., she'll be giving a virtual Tanner Lecture on ethics, citizenship, and public responsibility at Syracuse University. You can find information about that lecture by searching for Tanner Lecture Maxwell School. Marta, it's a delight to have you on the program.
Grant, it's really a pleasure to be with you.
So let's start with a brief recent history of Consumer Reports, especially for our listeners who know or remember the magazine, but maybe unaware of some of the other areas and efforts that the organization has been engaged in recent years. And then we can get into some more details after that. Let's just start with a, you know, really brief recent history.
Well, when you say recent, it kind of brings a smile to my face because for an organization that's been around for 36 years, since 1936, that means it's our 85th anniversary. That's a long time. And it's a long time to kind of build the trust of not only consumers, but of corporate America, manufacturers, and government. It was a pretty innovative idea when our founders, who were kind of quirky, geeky engineers, wanted to put the marketplace to the test. How do you keep the marketplace honest? Just after the Great Depression, right, you have a lot of upheaval, you have new products coming onto the market, you have scammers. And so how do you do that? And I think the last 85 years has shown that folks are incredibly loyal to information they can trust. And so while we may have gotten started with a magazine, and many of folks who've been with us for a very long time continue to read the magazine, we have 6 million members. We have over four, any given month, over 14 million unique views to our website, where we have all of the product reviews. But what I think a lot of people don't know is we're a nonprofit. We are completely independent. We're not a big media publishing company. We really see the work we do as a public service, and we're really powered by our members. And we basically spend our time investigating stories and consumer harms in the marketplace. We advocate based on the research we do. We do an enormous amount of survey work so we can have our finger on the pulse of what consumers are saying and thinking and experiencing in the marketplace as well. And then of course we have what most people know us for is, you know, over 80 plus labs that are testing, you know, in any given year, more than 2,000 products and services.
So there's different kinds of threats that consumers face. I mean, there's physical safety in the use or consumption of a product. There's the old fashioned, you know, ripoff, selling someone a bill of goods, something that doesn't work. And then there is scamming to, you know, extract money usually, but resources from victims in one way or another. In recent years, has Consumer Reports focused more on one of these problem areas, or do you try to cover the waterfront there?
Well, the way we like to think about it is consumer harms can come in many different shapes and sizes, but the way we anchor our investigations is really, we are looking obviously for safety in a product or service, or your own personal safety, of course, whether that is online or in the supermarket or in the food you eat, the car you drive, the insurance, the student loan you may have signed on to and you weren't, and the fine print didn't necessarily own up to what you believed. Then there's also the basic fairness. How fair is the marketplace? Is there an inherent bias in some more vulnerable populations or in other consumers? And then I think what undergirds all of that is justice. You know, so many of us go to the marketplace every day to really fulfill an ambition, a goal in your life, right? Whether it's a, as I said, a college loan or a mortgage. And so you want to sense that the marketplace is fair and just. That has always been the core of our mission. And so the harms that we investigate are really looking for that.
Well, has there been any recent initiatives by Consumer Reports that are focused on the pandemic and some of the challenges that that brings up?
Well, what we've learned over time is that anytime you have a crisis, whether it be an earthquake, natural disasters, and now this pandemic, it seems to breed scams and misinformation and a lack of trust. And we certainly saw that with the pandemic. And for us, the challenge was to turn on a dime and to begin to do our investigations in a safe environment by going remotely. But I think what we did was in last March, and I can't believe it's been a year now, but we stood up what we called the COVID hub, which was where you go to just get all the information that consumers were really struggling to find and to find trustworthy information. So on the one hand, here we are, we've got an internet, Google search, where you can go on and find anything you want. But I think the struggle for consumers that are searching for information is, how do you tell if something is trustworthy? How do you tell whether that's an ad or not? And so folks were looking for basic things like, what kind of household cleaner is going to be the best product? If I go to pump gas, what's the best way to protect myself? But you know, that's fine if they're coming to Consumer Reports website, but with so much misinformation, how do you go where consumers are and help them? And so many consumers, as you know, are on the platforms. They're searching for products on Amazon. They're on Facebook, looking at what their friends say, looking at what communities say. So how do you put those platforms to the test? So we ran an experiment. And one of the things we did during COVID is we were seeing so much misinformation. We said, well, what kind of self-policing is available for these platforms? And so we submitted 7 incredibly bogus ads to Facebook. One of them actually said, drink bleach. And it was—
Where'd you get that from, I wonder?
Right, and it was a way to test and see how do we keep these incredibly powerful platforms honest. The sad news is that they actually approved all 7 bogus ads. Of course, we didn't run those ads, but there you see that the information and the lack of self-policing on these platforms is really absent. And so tremendous vulnerability for consumers in the midst of a pandemic.
I'm Grant Reher. You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, and I'm speaking with Marta Tolado, the president and CEO of Consumer Reports. You mentioned this experiment with Facebook. I was going to bring it up later, but let's talk about it now. And the drinking the bleach is difficult to believe. I just want to really drive this point home. Read a couple of the other ads, because I read the report that you folks did on this, and it's chilling. It really is. Here's another one, and the visual is a big picture of the coronavirus, and the message, it comes from something called the Self-Preservation Society, says social distancing doesn't make any difference at all. It won't slow the pandemic. So get back out there while you still can. And then there's another one that you folks put in there that says, don't stay in. It's also from the Self-Preservation Society. Don't stay in. The faster this spreads, the sooner we can get past the worst of it and return to normal. And it just really brings home the point that the internal policing mechanisms, and, you know, Facebook, I think, takes a lot of the brunt of this criticism, but the mechanisms just don't seem that robust.
Well, they're not. And not only are the self-policing mechanisms not working, but, you know, as a private citizen, you also make assumptions about is there a watchdog out there? Is the Federal Trade Commission able to enforce? And the reality is that what we've seen is a decline in investment in some of the agencies that should be watchdogging, and the skills and the technology that's really needed. And so, you know, how do you, if they're not self-policing, how do you think about what to do in an age where, particularly in a pandemic, when overnight we were forced into an online marketplace?
Yeah. So let's look forward to this Syracuse University lecture that I mentioned in the introduction. And The specific title of your lecture is Reclaiming Trust in an Age of Misinformation. So perfect for what we're talking about here. And we do seem to be, and you've already spoken to this, in a new era of misinformation, given the internet and social media and the use of these platforms. And that is both misinformation that's deliberately concocted and spread, but also shared unknowingly, you know, on the internet among individuals. So just if you could just step back from that for a minute, how does that expand and complicate the roles of independent sources like Consumer Reports?
Well, I think it makes them more relevant than ever. As I said, during the pandemic, when we saw so many people coming to our site, you know, 18 million in 1 month that were coming to, it really speaks to just how untrustworthy and how, what a lack of confidence. But I think it, you know, the larger point is that we have really seen power shift away from consumers. And what we find now is a handful of immensely powerful platforms, whether it's Google or Amazon or Facebook, that not just compete in a marketplace, they are the marketplace, right? And they are benefiting at every turn. And the way they're benefiting at every turn is that you may think that this information is free that you're picking up on the internet, but it's not. It's you, given your presence in any one of those platforms and what you may be shopping, your information is being tracked and sold to others. And that business model is one where consumers are left powerless. Where is your information being, who is your information being sold to? How much of your privacy is being violated? How much control do you have over whether you do that or not? Some of that information. So I think what we know now is that 3 out of 4 Americans already are deeply worried about the concentration of power that these platforms have. And so what are we going to do about it? And I think given the lack of enforcement and self-policing, that is, I think, why just this very week you saw hearings on Capitol Hill about whether our antitrust laws are keeping pace with the kind of marketplace that you're seeing today and what kind of impact that has on the average consumer.
I want to pursue a couple of lines there that you brought up, and we'll do it when we come back from the break. You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Marta Tolado, the president and CEO of Consumer Reports. On March 24th at 4 p.m., she'll deliver a virtual lecture in the Maxwell School's Tanner Lecture Series titled Reclaiming Trust in an Age of Misinformation. And you can find more information about that lecture by searching for Tanner Lecture Maxwell School. So I wanted to get into a couple of the things that you brought up and what you were talking about before the break. And let me break it out this way. One of the things that I was wondering about is there's so much misinformation out there, and it's so important. We could take the pandemic as the example we were talking about, that misinformation get corrected, that I'm wondering whether one challenge for organizations like yours is that most of your bandwidth gets occupied with just debunking at the expense of more proactive efforts to empower consumers, or if we want to call them consumer citizens. You don't have any time for anything else because you're just sort of knocking down the stuff that isn't true. Any thoughts about that?
Oh, that's a great question. And you're right. I mean, whack-a-mole is not a very productive use of one's time. And so here's the way we think about it. Consumer Reports, novel idea. To keep the market honest, you wait for that product to hit the market and you run it through the paces, you evaluate it in a very scientific and rigorous comparative to other products like it, and you determine its quality, its reliability, its safety, all well and good. And you see the market, given the power and confidence and trust of our brand, you also are able to shape the marketplace, because then consumers will be drawn to the product that is safer, and you will drive safety that way and reliability that way. But enter this world where our products, the rapid cycle of our products, and the updating of our products by simple software download, where perhaps your braking system isn't working, but a company decides we can fix that through an over-the-air. So how can you possibly wait for products to be fully formed and developed before you actually find what's wrong with them? And that's why it leads me to what we call at Consumer Reports upstream impact. Mm. How do you begin to influence product design? And how do you begin to do that so that you have a consumer perspective in what you do, and that begins to define quality and a race to the top? So let me point to something we tested that I think might illustrate the point on televisions, for example. And you buy a new smart TV.
I just did.
And you did buy them. Okay, so tell me about that experience.
You keep, well, I don't know where you're going with this, so I don't want to derail you, but you go ahead.
Well, my guess, here's the thing. My guess is that when you got that TV, you didn't go to the Consumer Reports website to figure out how to turn off some of the monitoring controls so that you're watching TV, but it's not watching you. And that perhaps it's your TV may still be hackable as a result of that. Or maybe you didn't look at the review that tells you buy the TV that is more likely to protect your privacy and not be hackable. So my point is that your privacy, what that does, it puts an immense amount of burden on you, the consumer, Grant, where in fact, when you bought that TV, privacy should have been a default setting. Right. And that's what leads me to, in this world of connected products, privacy should be a right, not a setting that you have to somehow figure out. So that is a very different way to impact the market than to wait and see what a particular company comes out on. It is no. Now, to do that, yes, I could give you ratings to create standards where none currently exist, by the way, in privacy. There are no standards that regulate how private that television or your doorbell camera is, for that matter. So yes, we created a digital standard, open source, but we also need laws to codify standards in a whole marketplace of products that currently do not have them. So yes, we've been around for 85 years. We're proud of all the consumer protections that we've been able to secure. But guess what, Grant? They don't cover that smart TV of yours.
Well, it's almost like you were in the room setting it up with me, because you anticipated all the experiences. So you're right. I didn't make the decision based on that. And as soon as this television got hooked up to the internet, a whole slew of fine print and questions came pouring out of that screen at me. And after a while, I think they wore me down. But I think I managed to say no to most of it. But it was... It does bring up this point that you were illustrating earlier about how it's a completely different notion of consumer protection, where now the consumer is the data point. I mean, the consumer is the marketable thing. And how do we protect our privacy in that regard? And that becomes then yet another thing on your plate.
And Grant, let me tell you this: if you had gone to the site and you might have turned off and turned on the privacy controls, some products, believe it or not, lose some functionality when you do that.
Yeah,
because they're trying to steer you into, no, actually, we'd like to sell the data and your tracking and what you're watching to a third party. And if you turn it off, does it impact your functionality? There are no laws regarding that either.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. And my guest is Marta Tilotto, the president and CEO of Consumer Reports. I want to shift the terrain a little bit here. And you mentioned that you do a lot of surveying and taking the pulse of things. I'm wondering whether there are certain kinds of warning messages that work better and resonate better with consumers. Like, for example, I'm thinking of the difference between a message that says you're being ripped off and another message that says you are unsafe. So have you done any, what do we know about that?
Well, I mean, you're also asking a question about safety in the midst of a pandemic. Mm. And so what we do know is that safety is front in mind, is front and center. However, you know, if you think about, you know, conscientious consumerism and you think about those milestones in your life that are driving the decisions you're making. And so what I mean by that is you're starting a family and you are thinking about the car seat for that infant. And so that's a safety concern. And it's not because you're interested in, you know, which fabric is going to go well with the upholstery in your car. You actually want to know whether it's been crash tested. Wow. And that's something we do, but you know, that's very much front and safety. I would say that maybe 5-10 years ago, folks were not thinking so much about privacy in digital products. But once you get things like the Equifax hacks and your private information, and you're seeing more and more of that, we now have an awareness around our privacy. So I think you're going to see a tipping point now around how you secure those rights for consumers. So there is an awareness. I think the education piece is really important, and that's what we do. But I guess the point I would like to make is that despite the fact that we don't have these laws and we don't have not codified what is now become our digital marketplace, I think consumers are sort of a sleeping giant. Their power is a sleeping giant. And so much of the education that we do with consumers is really to wake up that power and to move in that direction.
So we've got about 5 minutes left or so, but I want to try to squeeze in two or three questions if I can. And the first one is, you've got a book in the works, and I love the title, Buyer Aware. And it's about how individuals can better empower themselves to guard against being taken advantage of and to better hold, and we've been talking about this in different ways, to better hold government leaders accountable to provide them with better protection. It's not scheduled to be out for a while. Maybe we'll have you back when it comes out, but without spoiling too much, can you say just a few words about what kinds of things you hope to cover there in the book?
Well, yeah, and I think the title, you know, is relevant to what we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. You were the one with all the responsibility in setting up your television. You're the one with the responsibility for figuring out whether that insurance policy is actually one that is suited to your life. So I think too much of the burden is being placed on consumers. So how do we wrest that power back in a marketplace that is not very transparent right now, right? We have gone from a hardware to software world. How do you begin to make decisions that are safer and smarter for your family when in fact algorithms that are proprietary are making decisions for you and are exposing you to choices based on what that algorithm assumes about you? And where's the damage being done and to whom? So the book is all about how is that happening? And, you know, I guess my hope is that we are going to promote some solutions to make sure that it stops happening and that we actually end up with a consumer-driven economy. And by that, I mean one that actually addresses consumer needs, desires, wants, and is defined by them and for them.
I have a kind of a personal question I want to make sure I get to at the end. And I'm about to ask one that is going to open up a huge can of worms. So if you could just be brief on this, but I'd be remiss if I didn't make the obvious connection between the things we're talking about and the recent political climate and misinformation that exists there. Your organization is stridently nonpartisan, but still there are some comparisons there. Do you just have a couple quick reflections on how all this plays out in the political environment that we're in?
Well, I think we have been in a political environment that's very polarized. Yeah. And that is not new. And I think one of the things that has been our North Star is that regardless of what the political climate is like, our bias is consumers first.
Okay.
We've got to work with the regulatory agencies, with the administration, with elected officials to champion putting consumers first. And our ability to do that, I think our independence, our science-driven nature and protocols and methodologies and the survey work we do make us the kind of trusted partner that will really, I think, bring the kind of confidence that consumers are looking for.
Got about a minute and a half left, but I wanted to make sure I asked you this question. It's a little bit more personal, if I may, but basically what I want to know is, how do you sleep at night? Because you sit on top of this organization that finds every problem and every safety concern and every piece of misinformation and the ways that we're being lied to. I would think that that would get to you after a while.
You know, Grant, it's a great question, but here's the flip side of that. I also get to be part of this incredible team of folks that are also coming up with solutions. And when you see your solutions become law, or you see the way consumers move a market by making choices that drive change, I wouldn't trade it for anything. Progress happens, change happens. And, you know, always remind people, seatbelts did not organically grow in cars. All of the new technologies that we see on the road in your brand new car, those are the seatbelts of today. And when we were able to finally get backup cameras to be a required standard feature of every car, that's a huge victory for every family. And that continues every day. We have stories like that. So it's such an honor and a pleasure to do this every day.
Well, that's a good note to end on. And again, I want to invite our listeners to hear more about what Marta has to say about these issues in her upcoming virtual lecture at Syracuse University. This is Wednesday, March 24th at 4 p.m. And again, you can get information on that lecture by searching for Tanner Lecture Maxwell School. Again, that was Marta Tolato, President and CEO of Consumer Reports. Marta, I want to thank you so much for making the time to speak to me. It was a thrill having you on, and I want to wish good health to you and your family.
Thank you so much, Grant. Really a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, conversations in the public interest.
The Campbell Conversations, conversations in the public interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Mark Levonier. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.